First case on calendar this morning is the Commission on Ethics versus Ira Hansen, as well as Jim Wheeler in their official capacities. Tracy Chase for the appellant, if you're ready to proceed, please do so, and if you wish to reserve time, so state.
Your Honor, may it please the Court, my name is Tracy Chase. I represent the Nevada Commission on Ethics. Here with me today is my co-counsel, Yvonne Navarez-Goodson. The Commission would request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor. The Commission will establish that it has not violated the open meeting law. Its Commission counsel had actual and implied authority to file this notice of appeal. Accordingly, the Commission requests this Court dismiss the motion to dismiss, reinstate briefing, and consider this appeal on its merits.
Ms. Chase,
yes.
You acknowledge, don't you, that in the argument and the pleadings before the panel that heard this case, you did not maintain this. You didn't argue that there had been some derivative authority provided to the counsel, previous counsel, and executive directory. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. May I explain?
Of course.
Yes, thank you. The executive director's affidavit was confirms the actual authority was provided in 2014 from the commission to the commission counsel through the stewardship of the chair in managing the litigation. When you have a case that goes through the natural process coming up to this court on appeal, it goes through the district court. And that's where a record of appeal is actually created. In the district court process, you have the benefit of filing the complaint, answering, and motion work, as well as witness preparation. We did not have the benefit of that process in presenting our defenses at the appellate level. There is no record of appeal that this court or the commission could rely upon. So when we were first responding in the opposition, we responded to the fact that the respondents were contending that we violated the open meeting law by not holding a public meeting in 2015. Once we responded to that, we didn't realize the authority issues were going to come up until the reply, as indicated in the dissent. For the first time, those authority issues of commission counsel came up in the reply. Therefore, we looked through the case, went back through the history of the case, and learned there was other authority that was provided. But that was also in accordance with how the commission's standard practice was in directing its litigation. So we verified that actual authority was given in 2014. We believe that verification is demonstrative and it is determinative of the issues in this case.
So why shouldn't one of the key questions that was raised in the previous opinion is whether the decision to appeal a case, like deciding to settle a case, should be subject, is an action under the open meeting law. Why isn't that the case? Why shouldn't those two be equated?
Well, they can in some circumstances, Your Honor, but the facts are different here. Here the facts are is the commission in its early processes had the ability to do a certain number of process under the veil of confidentiality. It is an express exemption in the open meeting law. Under NRS 281A 440 subsection 8, all materials, all communications, all records, all matters that relate to an ethics complaint until the panel issues a panel determination or until the subject's waived confidentiality are confidential. So the 2014 direction was given at a time that those matters were confidential. We did not believe that you have to give another direction because the direction was never retracted from the commission. They knew from the very beginning of this case that this case would go to appeal.
Am I correct?
And that's reflected, in fact, in the stipulation in the original record to stay the commission proceedings pending district court review and any appeal thereof, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I correct in my understanding, though, that there is no meeting of the commission authorizing counsel to undertake any legal actions in connection with the Hansen and Wheeler investigation?
There was no meeting. No, Your Honor. There was no meeting in 2015, which is what was alleged the violation to have occurred in the motion to dismiss. The commission did meet and give its instruction in 2014 to its then commission counsel to take the case through the appellate level.
It states appellate level?
Pardon?
There's a resolution that refers to the appellate level?
Oh, no, Your Honor. There was direction.
My question is, what action is reflected in the minutes of the commission meeting in 2014 when this complaint comes in that authorized counsel to proceed with appellate review? And you're talking about an appeal of an action where the district court had rejected the commission's legal position. It seems, I mean, couldn't even have been considered, could it?
In 2014, the commission met with its counsel. There are no minutes, Your Honor, that reflect that meeting. The counsel's affidavit establishes that authority was given at that time to take the case through the stewardship of the chair to through the appellate level. We knew, the commission knew it wasn't the first time because the issues of the expansion, not expansion, the jurisdictional issues of the over legislatures has been challenged frequently in front of the commission. So we knew the case had issues that would be only determined by this court to tell us what parameters we should address in addressing those issues.
Ms. Chase, if there were no minutes of that particular meeting, what do we draw our attention to know what they were authorized to do?
I would draw your attention to the affidavit of the executive director, who at the time was commission counsel. She was a commission counsel for a number of years and was commission counsel in 2014.
And what part of that affidavit would you point to be that authorization?
Your Honor, may I grab the affidavit? Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I direct your attention to number 7. As commission counsel, the commission also granted express authority to address all legal matters on receipt of the ethics complaint in consultation with the chair within the time frame that the case was statutorily confidential, pursuant to the open meeting law exemption.
And this is the affidavit that was filed a month after the panel's opinion in the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
But there were no minutes in 2014. Wouldn't the absence of minutes by a public body itself be a violation of the open meeting law?
No, Your Honor, because those proceedings are deemed confidential. There is no requirement that the open meeting law minutes requirement would apply to those proceedings. Turning back to my oral argument, the commission will focus its oral argument on three main areas: authority, delegation, and the fact that the open meeting law does not apply. As indicated, the authority was given to commission counsel to take this through appeal in 2014. Now, all the proceedings at that time were confidential. The executive director's affidavit confirms actual authority as indicated to this court. There are three reasons to consider the affidavit. There is no record of appeal as indicated previously. The record was never developed in front of the district court, and the affidavit is dispositive. NRS 241-037 requires the district court to make the determination on whether or not there has been a violation of the open meeting law. Therefore, the court process should have been properly instituted so that we would have a record on appeal. Further, on actual authority, Supreme Court Rule 45 confirms that the authority for a counsel of record to file procedural notices. A record of the notice of appeal is a procedural notice under this court's decision in State versus Connery. In addition to actual authority, Commission counsel had implied authority. Implied authority was based upon the facts in tandem with reading of Supreme Court Rule 45 and the principles under the Nevada Rules of Professional Conduct. Turning to delegation, the Commission had authority to delegate the stewardship of the litigation to the chair. The Mason's Manual, as cited by respondents, is not applicable to the Commission. It is applicable to a legislative body conducting a legislative act. The Commission was conducting an executive branch processes in processing the ethics complaint. The Commission's ratification confirms the 2014 direction and the desire of the client to take this case through appeal. Commission counsel was properly directed to take the appeal through. The third point, that the open meeting law does not apply. It doesn't apply to the 2014 direction. Number one, it's outside the statute of limitations. And number two, the 2014 direction was in confidential proceedings that is permitted to the Commission. The Johnson and the Tombstone cases are legally and factually distinguishable, given the marked differences between Nevada's open meeting law and Arizona's open meeting law. The open meeting law in Nevada does not require that all legal matters be conducted by a public body in a public meeting. The Commission's proceedings here at the time were exempt. It was not until April of 2015 that the two assemblymen waived confidentiality. The 2015 direction, which is the substance of the motion to dismiss, was from the chair. It was not from the Commission in a meeting. It was not in violation of the open meeting law. The Commission has numerous other defenses that it set forth in its pleadings as well, including the original jurisdiction of an open meeting law violation rests with the district court. Lack of standing on behalf of the two assemblymen, as this matter is brought in their official capacity rather than the personal capacity. Any official capacity litigation should have been brought through the authority of the Attorney General's office. The 2014 open meeting law exemptions and the applicable statute of limitation expiration. Further, respondents cite NRS 281A440 subsection 11 notice requirements as being applicable. If you look carefully at those notice requirements, they apply to the hearings and adjudications of the Commission after a panel determination has been issued.
Counsel, you're at 154. Do you wish to reserve that time? Or
yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Powers?
Good morning, Your Honors. For the record, Kevin Powers, Chief Litigation Counsel, LCB Legal Division, on behalf of the respondents, Assemblyman Ira Hansen and Jim Wheeler. The starting point has to be this affidavit that the court pointed out. The affidavit was submitted after the panel decision, which is improper under the rules governing panel petitions for rehearing and en banc reconsideration.
Well, but you didn't raise the open meeting law violation in district court. You commenced a separate district court action and then tried to make that part of the record in this case. I mean, part of the sloppiness of this whole proceeding is that the open meeting law violation asserted by you was not litigated in district court, correct?
That's correct, but we had to proceed in the alternative. We had to file a motion to dismiss because this court determines its own jurisdiction. But just in case this court decided to remand it to the district court, we had to file a complaint in the district court to preserve the assemblyman's appeal on rights in the district court under the 60-day statute of limitations.
What's the time limit for you to complain about an open meeting law violation?
To declare an action void, it's 60 days after the action was taken. The action was taken on October 29, 2015, when they filed.
And if you don't do it within 60 days, what happens?
As any other statute of limitations, the action would be barred.
So where does that put this court in calculating whether a notice of appeal was correctly taken by an entity subject to the open meeting law? When there's no challenge and it just runs past the 60 days, is it a no-good appeal notice for a period of time pending challenge? How does that work?
Well, I think because it's trying to invoke this court's jurisdiction and something, if a person files a notice of appeal without authority, that's an act that's void ab initio from its beginning. And so the court could consider an open meeting law challenge to avoid notice of appeal even beyond that 60-day statute of limitations. However, here, the motion to dismiss was filed.
But no, I'm testing the proposition. So the rule of law that you're advocating for is if a notice of appeal is filed by an entity subject to the open meeting law without a meeting authorizing that notice of appeal to be filed, that appeal is void for the whole course of the appeal whenever that jurisdictional infirmity is raised.
That's correct.
And how do you square that with the 60-day time limit on a party raising it?
Simply because in order to invoke jurisdiction, you have to have a timely notice of appeal. That's a separate jurisdictional standard in this appellate court. And in the context of appellate court, it would take precedence over that 60-day time frame for the open meeting law in the district court.
Thank you.
And in response to your earlier comment with regarding the stipulation in April of 2015 specifically said that the administrative proceedings were stayed while the case was pending within the jurisdiction of the Nevada Court of Appeals or the Nevada Supreme Court. The stipulation used the specific word jurisdiction. So it contemplated that there would have to be a proper invoking of jurisdiction by either party. In addition, the parties can't stipulate the jurisdiction. So in that stipulation, the parties couldn't agree to allow the commission to file a notice of appeal by a violation of the open meeting law. And that stipulation didn't change anything in this course of this appeal. The commission also argues that the reason it filed the affidavit because it didn't have time to react to the arguments raised in the assemblyman's reply brief in February of 2016. But 2 months before February 2016, on December 16, 2015, the commission held a meeting in which it improperly attempted to ratify its appeal. At that meeting, the commission's counsel specifically said, with regard to ratification, at the time, the commission did not meet in open session, that they did not meet in quorum. There were no serial communications to provide that direction. So the direction was taken from the chair and the executive director by the commission counsel to pursue that appeal. So ratification of those actions would be appreciated. So 2 months before we filed the reply, the commission was stating on a public record that there was no meeting ever held.
There's no reference in that meeting to the 2014 authority that this affidavit now claims.
Correct. None at all. And they say this is a standard practice to give counsel the ability to appeal. Well, if it was a standard practice, then they should have known it then. But the fact of the matter is, this meeting where the commission was supposedly authorizing its counsel to file an appeal in 2014 would have been 18 months before there was an appealable order. How can a public body exercise its decision-making authority about a matter that doesn't even exist?
Mr. Powers, as you got into the public body, counsel made a point of attempting to educate us as to the distinction as to this public body versus an agency, i.e. county or so on, and its open meeting law responsibilities. And she was asserting a difference. How do you respond to that assertion?
What they're asserting is that 218A 440 gives them a complete exemption from the open meeting law so that they could have this secret meeting in 2014 and authorize their counsel to file an appeal 18 months before there was an appealable order. But 218A440, the plain language, they refer to subsection 8. That's an exemption from the public records law, not the open meeting law. The only exemption from the open meeting law in 281A440 is subsection 16, and it exempts the commission's ability to receive information and evidence and conduct deliberations on hearings involving ethical conduct. In other words, the adjudicatory hearings that the commission holds under 281A440 are exempt from the open meeting law, but only to receive information and evidence and only to conduct deliberations. What's not in the exemption is an exemption for action. And we know the open meeting law makes a distinction.
Can I pause you there and ask you how you get out of the definition of action in NRS 241-0151 the proposition that a lawyer can't file a notice of appeal for a corporate entity without a board resolution authorizing the notice of appeal? I don't see that in the definition of action, and that's one of the things that's really puzzling about your position to me.
Well, we would have the same problem with the decision to settle. The decision to settle doesn't fit neatly within the definition of action. What action represents is any decision that by other law a public body
Where
must...
Where do you get that out of the text of 241.015?
I don't, but where I get it is the fundamental principle of majority rule. As we know, no group can make a decision unless at a meeting of that group a majority of a quorum
But
decides.
That would establish something as ultra vires, but it doesn't establish it. It could establish it as ultra vires, in which case you're not in the open meeting law. You are on something that could be declared invalid, but you don't have a quorum. You don't have a meeting. And I'm struggling to see how you can say Nevada law requires the board to have a public meeting and vote on it to authorize an appeal, and that they cannot in the past authorize their legal lawyers to take appeals in matters that are litigated, particularly preliminary jurisdictional ones like this one.
It's true if you don't have a quorum, you don't have a meeting. But if you don't have a quorum and you don't have a meeting, you can't have a decision.
Do you think that says that in paragraph 1 of 241.015?
Absolutely. Otherwise, every public body could avoid the open meeting law by allowing less than a quorum to make any decision at once. As long as there's no quorum, then those members...
Well, but there's the intent to evade issue that's, you know, everyone concedes there was no intention to evade anything here. I mean, I think there's a statutory provision that was passed after one of our main cases in this that says, you know, if there's serial separate meetings and intent to evade, then even though there wasn't a formal meeting that violated the open meeting law, you could still have it apply. But there's nothing like that here, is there?
But what we do have is both
But there's no intent to evade here that you see, is there?
Well, actually, there was an intent to evade. They never held any meeting at all. They completely avoided the open meeting law. They thought they were exempt, and they're not. So they did actually evade all the requirements of the open meeting law, and they still believe that they can do that for an exemption in 281A440, whose language doesn't allow them to do that.
Other than the Intermediate Court of Appeals decision from Arizona, do you have any case applying the open meeting law to invalidate a notice of appeal as wholly void and irretrievably void because not preceded by the public body vote?
Well, we cite two cases, Shaw versus Common Council and another
that's
case.
That's an Arizona case as well, right?
No, that's not one of the Arizona cases. That's actually a case from the 1950s from another jurisdiction. There's one also from South Dakota, the Bake case, and the one Shaw versus Common Council is also from one of the
But you would cases. Agree that most states don't follow the rule you're championing here based on the Arizona law?
I wouldn't agree with that. There's two cases cited in your dissent in which the courts rejected open leading law claims voiding a notice of appeal, but we cite at least three cases from other jurisdictions where courts did void a notice of appeal. So if there's a prevailing view, it's that you void the notice of appeal. I think the important thing to look at, too, is that the legislature and this court have both said that action regarding litigation has to be conducted in an open meeting.
Stop you for a second. So, but instigating an action, okay.
Settling an action,
I don't think there's much dispute there. Now, you're suggesting now notice of appeal, that's subject to open meeting, or there's some argument that's just a procedural, like a placeholder, like it allows you to preserve your right to appeal, and then whether they pursue it or not is a different issue. What other decisions along the way are you suggesting would have to be in an open meeting? So you're saying a notice to file of a notice of appeal, you have to have an open meeting. What decisions are left to the lawyer to pursue in vindicating their client's interests, and which are now going to be the subject of a public meeting within that spectrum?
I think the panel decision got it correct where it said the material steps in the litigation process. Filing a notice of appeal is like initiating a case in a new court. You're invoking the jurisdiction of a different court. It's no different than filing a complaint in the district court. I would say that if a public body wanted to file an original action for mandamus in this court, they would have to approve that because that's initiating an action in a different court. And initiating a mandamus action is no different from filing a notice of appeal. It's those actions that are material steps in the litigation process. Now, some of the amici argue this is going to have the effect that every motion in every case is going to have to
be. Well, that's the question I have. I wanted to expand on what Justice Stiglitz said. Is this something, Mr. Powers, that the legislature can fix so that this doesn't happen, so that the medical board and the state contractors board and all the boards won't have to worry because it's going to be in the statute as to how to fix this with the open meeting law? Can it be fixed so we don't have this controversy?
Oh, it could be fixed, but I don't think it needs to be fixed. I think this is a policy decision by the legislature that these material steps in the litigation should be, action should be taken on them in an open public meeting by the public body.
But the amici raises some issues about split-second decisions that have to be made where they can't get everybody together.
Those will be rare, but there's also an exception in the open meeting law. In the event of an emergency, a public body doesn't have to comply with the open meeting law. So if it's in a situation where a public body needs to act quickly in reaction to a lawsuit filed by someone else, that would be an unforeseen circumstance that would invoke the emergency exception to the open meeting law, and then they would not have to comply with the
open. This court with texts and emails, there's no such thing as an emergency anymore. I mean, once you get the email, we move, all seven of us. I've never seen people act so fast as we do. You can't get a shirt cleaned in one day, but we can answer a pretrial writ in one day.
Well, that would seem to suggest then that the public bodies can equally respond in an emergency if need be to file an appeal.
That's correct. They can meet by electronic communication.
Well, but I'd like to ask you
a question, if I may, Mr. Powers, with respect to the argument or the question raised by Justice Stiglitz. In initiating an appeal, a public body is initiating an expenditure of public funds for the cost associated with that and the delay that is associated with that and the legal propositions that are surrounding that. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And with the policy behind the open meeting law,
which is quite a bit different than a motion to continue a civil case.
That's correct. The motion to continue a civil case are all motions conducted within the court after jurisdiction is invoked. Those are within the lawyer's authority to manage the case. But choosing whether or not to invoke a court's jurisdiction and expend those public funds has to be done in a public meeting.
Don't you think it'd be
You go ahead.
Don't you think it'd be incumbent upon the lawyer to preserve the right in case the body wants to go forward with the appeal? We've been calling the 30-day, the meeting, you know, roughly after a ratification action. What if they had got together at that point and said, you know what, actually, we don't want to pursue the appeal? I mean, they have that right after, but if they don't preserve the right by filing a notice of appeal, hasn't the council acted in dereliction of their duties to pursue the lawsuit?
They have not, because this court in the McKay case from 1987, and it's been recognized by the legislature in the litigation exception, that public attorneys have other duties than private attorneys when representing a governmental client. As a matter of public policy, the legislature has said, before you file that notice of appeal, the public attorney has to have authority from its public body because they want the public body to hold a public meeting, discuss the merits of whether an appeal.
What statute says that, sir? You just said the legislature has said that. What statute says that a public body's board must pre-authorize any appeal in a public meeting before a notice of appeal is filed?
The open meeting law reflects that any decision by a public meeting, by a public body, has to be conducted in a public
meeting. But you said that it says that they must have a board vote before filing a notice of appeal, and that the legislature said that. The legislature did not say that, did it?
In 241.015.3b2, the legislature created a litigation exception that allows public bodies to deliberate in private, but they have to take action in public. That statute requiring action to be taken in public is the statute that governs, and we've just, and because the decision to appeal is a mere material step in the litigation process, that's an action that has to be done in public. It's not a deliberation.
That's your interpretation of it. That's not what it says.
The legislative history for that litigation exception says deliberations in private, action in public. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any additional question of Mr. Powers before he sits down? Thank you, Mr. Powers.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Commission does not dispute its obligations under the open meeting law, and it is not asserting the litigation exception as a defense. The Commission is asserting the defenses of confidentiality over proceedings and exemption from the open meeting law. It would be a catch-22 if the confidentiality protections provided to the Commission are not upheld by this court.
Let me ask you something in that regard. We were talking about the expenditure of public funds and the policy issues behind that. What if the this public body wanted to hire outside counsel to pursue the appeal? And then there's a considerable fiscal impact there in expenditure of public funds. And you don't think that needs to be presented to the board for discussion and consideration of public meeting?
I think if outside counsel was in substitution of commission counsel on this case, the same rules that I am proposing are precedential would apply. The confidentiality would still apply. And all of those matters and the direction that was given in 2014 would still have been given at that time. If you're saying that a new counsel was hired after the waiver of confidentiality and after a waiver, the panel determination, that would perhaps be a different matter, but those are not the facts of this case. The catch-22 presented is, does the commission violate the open meeting law, or does it violate its confidentiality requirements? And those requirements are to protect the subject coming through the system. We cannot release information. It's just not public records. We cannot release information. We cannot discuss communications. We cannot release anything that occurs during that period of time, during the veil of confidentiality that is imposed over those proceedings. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Ms. Chase, Mr. Powers, thank you for the arguments you presented to the state in lightness as to this particular proceeding. This matter will